All right, now we want to go over the typical mistakes that others make that they have written me about, and perhaps we can do something from our insights to help them avoid this. The first and most common error, which all of us made in the beginning, was that we picked the horse that was good its last race, but is not going to run up to that race this time. Consequently, we're on a false favorite when our second or third choice should have been our pick. The delineation between second and third choice, and I'm talking about numerical choice, when you have a first choice that is so obvious, is one of the big problems. What are some of the indications that a horse that looked like a world beater from his last race is going out of form? And if we can correct that, we'll get an awful lot of high-priced horses. Bob, you want to start that ball rolling?
Well, if it's been quite a while since he's been on the track, I don't like to use arbitrary days, but let's say that he had a real bang-up race in his last race, and it was the same class, same distance, everything appears to go to use that pace line. But it's been 2 to 3 weeks since he's been on the racetrack, and you look down at the workout, not a solitary workout since his last race. To me, that's a tip-off that the horse has got some problems, especially if we're talking about claiming races.
Did you bring it up? Well, I'm making some notes here and comment on it. Tom, how do you handle a horse that looks like he's a world beater from his last race, but when he runs today, he's finishes down the track?
I'm going to run along with Bob on this because I'd love to bet against the last out winner that's been kept in the barn for 3 or 4 weeks. There's just no, especially a claiming horse, there's no reason to keep him in the barn. There was a horse called Next Bend that just ran at Santa Anita last weekend at a short price and won easily and impressively and spent 3 weeks in the barn.
That's a very good point. How long, if the trainer thought the world of him and he was ready to repeat that performance, why did he wait so long to run him?
And why does he leave him at the same class level or step him up only one level if he runs a world-beating type race? That's the kind of horse you want to protect from the other claims.
Very good idea. Is he offering that horse for sale too cheap? Good idea. Larry, any comments on that one?
Well, no, the mistakes I make, getting back to mistakes, is that I forget that the classier horses can be off longer than the cheaper horses, and that falls in the same category.
Al?
Well, if you want to do a little extra work, you can run a profile on the horse, and a lot of times that'll give you an indication. The horse that won his last race may not have necessarily run his best race in terms of being close to the pace. He may actually have been going downhill and have happened to pick up a win against lesser horses. If you see a horse that's regressing, that his pattern is going the other direction, and you can pretty much assume that he's going to continue his regression. And that regression sometimes can be speeded up, or that a hard win could be a catalyst because it takes so much out of a horse that he'll reach that point where he's going to really tail off right after that.
Frank, I'm kind of making notes of what everyone said.
Well, I sometimes found that if you take a look at the horse's last out and it was a very good race and he was right there or maybe even won the race, and you take a look at his second back, and he was also very competitive, it just might be that that last out took an awful lot out of him. And when it came around for this particular race or today's race, he just didn't have it. He put it all together in his last, and even though it looked good, he didn't have anything left for today.
Ron?
I can't think of a thing to add.
Okay, I'll sum up then. And to sum up what we're trying to get people away from is betting the obvious choice because he had an excellent, apparently excellent, last race. We have found out if you throw out some of these horses or discount them or move them to your third choice, that you then move the alleged numerical third choice up to second and you'll be betting him and getting better prices. What I think we have said is look to see how the horse ran the race. If he ran against a very hard pace, against a very fast pace, and he had to close especially strong to win, that's an indication that he's not going to do as well this time. If he had too easy an early pace and was not contested and won easily, it's a little better sign, but it's still another sign that if he's contested today, he's not going to do as well. Look for a bad fraction or an exceptionally good fraction that overwhelms the other. Remember, if that horse won that race and he had to do it with a strong closing effort, he's far less likely to repeat today than he would if he had an easy pace accomplishment, just barely off the pace, and then moved in. But a closer, something to watch out for, they seldom repeat. Any other comments on that? Because you realize that if we can get people away from those horses that appear to everybody on the track to be the best horse and can get them to the next two, they'll get much better odds and you'll get much better win percent.
When you get away from the claiming ranks and you move into allowance and even stakes company, you're looking at a class or your type of horse, they generally can repeat performance much better than your claiming horses can. But a good tip-off, we were just talking about, even the claiming races, if particularly a filly has had two hard driving finishes where she is challenged in the stretch, then the third effort is going to be much, much less. That driving finish under a challenge from other horses takes an awful lot out of it.
Truly does.
Three is about the maximum for colts and geldings. Now, we're talking about classy horses, not claiming horses. Two hard driving finishes for fillies and three hard driving finishes for colts. You better not use any one of those last three races because they're just not going to perform for that today. If they do, you're going to get beat. Maybe you should be better to race anyway.
A good indication of that is in New Orleans at Fairgrounds, you have the lowest percentage of repeat winners in any track in the country because of the 1,349-foot stretch. You see them start whipping that horse to death as they come around the turn all the way to the finish, and they have a very low percentage of repeaters. And when you see that a horse had to win under a driving finish, you can fairly well say that a lot was taken out of that horse, even though it looked like a brilliant finish, that it's not going to repeat it. And maybe the reason that it was not, as take it back to Tom's, that he laid it off for 5-6 weeks even after a win, that's the reason. And 5 or 6 weeks isn't long enough.
Another thing to look at sometimes is the spacing or intervals between recent races. If your last time out horse was a winner, but he'd run, say, 7 to 10 days apart for the last three times out, he's just about used up to get that win, and he's probably awfully tired by now. So I often look to see the interval between the last three races and see if they've been racing, the races have been fairly close together.
Good point. The next common mistake that people make is that they are looking for a specific rule. They're looking for a specific guideline in days off. They're looking for a specific race, whether it's got to be either the best race or the second best race. If you try to categorize the race, the pace line you're going to use by best, second best, within 30 days, or any specific rule, you are going to pick the wrong pace line. In my estimation, I've seen people who are looking for set rules in picking a pace line will never pick the right pace line consistently. Anybody got any statement? All of us were trained as children to live by rules. How do you overcome a cultural pattern that says live by rules in one instance, Frank, and then not go by rules in horse race handicapping?
Well, I think if we got into set rules, there are a number of very highly qualified handicappers, and I'm not aware of anyone, even through the use of computers, that are able to lay down strict rules and provide themselves with a high percentage of winners. It's just not possible. If it was, we would be sitting here saying, here are a number of factors to plug into your computer, and you're going to come out with 90%, and that's impossible. There's the element that you're dealing with an animal who is subjected to a lot of different kinds of feelings and emotions, just like a human is. And there's just as it's impossible for one to be so rigid that you will anticipate receiving consistent results in that way.
Tom, you're a corporate executive, and a large corporation has rules set down for its people. How can you follow and dictate certain rules in your executive capacity and then say in handicapping that you should not follow any given set of rules?
Well, that's easy, because every time I try to set rules for myself in this game, I wind up feeling it in the pocketbook. And that's where you would break it down. I can't stay within. The recency is the good example of that, because if you try to keep it within a 21 or a 24-day period for the last race, or a 22-day period, that ignores the fact that horses are different, just the same as human beings are different. And some horses thrive on running every 30 days. And if you have a 21-day cutoff on that, you're going to take a beating at the racetrack. You have to show some flexibility. It depends on the horse itself. It's easy to stay within corporate rules because I get paid on those. But not at the racetrack.
You win with corporate rules, but you'll lose using rules in racing. One phrase that is constantly used, which I don't like, and I'd like to get your comments on it, is we talk about eliminating horses. All elimination rules that I've ever read eliminate horses. That's a negative factor. You eliminate rather than include. I like to think that you look for positive factors and include a horse in your figuring rather than eliminating a horse. Anybody got some comments on that? Because picking a pace line, of course, is based upon eliminating or including. And I prefer to think we include the winners, and by the process of just including the positive, the rest go by the wayside.
Well, the pace line will eliminate for you. Because if you're picking the proper pace line, by including a horse doesn't beat you, because the pace line itself will eliminate that horse.
Good point. So there's a positive point. Finds things that would cause you to include the horse rather than exclude the horse.
If your perception of today's race is correct, how you view the race is going to be run, and you actually painted a mental picture by taking, if there are eight horses in the field, eight different pace lines, you've painted a mental picture in your mind of how the race is going to be competed today. And the pace lines, as Tom says, are what eliminates the competition.
One thing that I have found that people do is that they will tend to eliminate a horse prior to evaluating its class potential. And the class, of course, will alter the pace line. Many people send me races where they've thrown out the horse that is three times, its average purse value is three times the purse of today's race, and they did not bother to find that out ahead of time.
Probably because of a poor performance in its last or in the last couple of races, which is a mistake.
Never throw out a top-class horse, and the first way you measure class is the purses the horse has been running for. Al, you have something there?
Oh, I want to go back on the comment that Tom was making about recency and setting fast rules on that. In this day and age of racing, I don't think you can use a 30-day rule or a 15-day rule. And it's my opinion that the racing secretary, as you know or may not know, writes a condition book that is good for a two-week period. Now, if you've got a horse that has just won, he deserves a little rest, and then you want to bring him back at his appropriate class. Well, that's not automatic. Races are written by the racing secretary, and you may not be able to get into the appropriate race at the appropriate class after a win. You may have to wait a while, and that period of time can be 3 or 4 weeks. So just because you see a horse laid off for that period of time does not mean that there's anything wrong with him. It's just that there wasn't the available race. What you do want to check for, though, is to see if the horse has been on the track, if he's working out. Not necessarily the time of the workouts, but the fact that he's on the track and working out.
That's an excellent point. The old cliches about, boy, if they come back in 7 days, they're a world beater, and they come back within 14, those rules cannot be applied anymore. They shouldn't even be published anymore, because it's almost impossible. Al owns horses, and he knows he might want to put a horse in 7 days, but what do you get, Al?
Well, you get on the also eligible list if you're lucky.
Yeah. So forget all those old books you read and those old pamphlets you bought telling you to watch out for those training maneuvers 7-14 days, because it's almost impossible sometimes to get a horse back in that time.
A competent trainer earns his living by keeping that horse fit on or off the racetrack. And if he's competent, he can go with
it. When people seek to go beyond the 60 to 63% wind proficiency and get up into the 70s and even up into the 80s by more careful selectivity, that they are able to reduce the number of contenders that they're going to put into their computer or they're going to handicap with their hand calculator to 5 or at the most 6. Now, the reason for this is if you have 10 horses that you're calculating, some horse that would otherwise not figure might have one good fraction, and when you see it in your readout, you'll worry about it, and it will give you a distorted view of the overall picture of the race. Whereas if you can reduce it to 5 or at the most 6, you will get a proper perspective of the course the race will take from looking at their readouts. So consequently, the subject we're going to address right now in group session is to how to get the number of contenders down to 5 or at the very most 6. Tom, you brought up the fact that you look for 3 bad races in a row and no justification within those races to indicate he's getting better today. You want to expand on that?
Well, a dull performance is, as long as we've survived the class determination and made sure that the horse belongs, a dull race is an indication the horse is either off form or going off form, one or the other. 2, you really shouldn't see if the trainer's worth his salt and if the horse is worth its salt. You shouldn't see 2 dull efforts without some moves or hidden fractions within those races. By the time you get to a third one, I've generally gotten rid of him anyway, but a third one is I generally take 3 and eliminate at that point.
I think we're all pretty much in agreement on that, but always look for a hidden fraction in those otherwise dull races because it might change your perspective.
Or an enormous class edge and some indication on the workout line that the horse is going to wake up. Yeah.
Now, another thing that you brought up, Larry, was horses coming from other tracks where the class of the track was much lower. How do you handle that?
Well, I've done some work on repeaters, and I did the entire Del Mar meet. They very seldom came in the money. None of them won. I'm talking about winners at lesser tracks, the shippers.
Right.
They're out.
So, in short, always look at the track from which the horse came, and when you'll see a 20% or a 40% or a 60% lower class track, don't expect it to function at a higher class track at the same level it did at the lower class track. Contrary-wise, this is the people in the Bay Area of California are talking about but never seem to do anything about. When a horse from Southern California tracks go up there, he invariably does a lot better than they expect him to. You've had experience with that, haven't you, Tom?
I lived in San Francisco for 2 years, and I steadily played Southern California horses that were coming up, and horses that we frankly couldn't take a pace line on. There just wouldn't be a race from the south that you could take a pace line on, and they would still.
So think positively of a horse going from a higher class track to a lower class track, and negatively of a horse that is going up in track class. And other aspects of class are you'll many times find that a horse is going up in class without justification, without any win or an outstanding performance is going up in class. Do you discount those horses equally? Bob?
Not right off the bat. I'll look at a horse that's moving up in class, particularly allowance. I mean, they have to move up in allowance company. They go through their conditions. Cycle conditions. But if a horse is being moved up in class for no apparent reason, then I am going to probably not include today on the rotation. There has to be a reason for a horse moving up in class.
Well, there's no effort that seems to indicate that it should move up in class. That's usually a negative sign, unless, as Bob says, you find some indication of a maneuver that points to a win. A good example happened the other day, and I'd like to have you people address the subject of claimed horses. A lot of people think that when a horse is claimed that he's going to improve on the next race, but is it not true that sometimes a horse will be claimed who looks like he's not too good today but was once good, and the horse wants, the trainer wants to keep the horse to improve it back to its previous level, and will put it up in class purposely so that nobody will take it from it? Have you found that to be true?
Well, first of all, it depends on how quickly they come back. They obviously have to run 25% higher within 30 days or in the claiming jail. But people who buy horses always think they're worth more than what they pay for them anyway. So they generally will pitch them a little high, whether they're in claiming jail or not. When they bring the horse back to what you know is its proper level, if you've done your baseline selection right, that's when you want to bet the horse.
So generally speaking, if a horse is over its head in class, either because of the track it came from or the claiming or allowance level, that is a good indication that he should not be positively considered. Al, how do you regard wins? Some people say if the horse hasn't won in 10 efforts, there's no reason to expect he's going to win today. Do you use that as a hard, fast rule, or do you kind of ameliorate it with your own concepts?
Well, I don't know what ameliorate means, but no, I don't have any hard and fast rules. I think if you get locked into some winners, I look at the total picture of the horse, and if it hasn't won in several times out, perhaps you could make an excuse for a lot of those disappointments, changes in class, changes of competition, maybe even a change of track. There could be a lot of different reasons. I am interested in what the horse has done or not done in the past, and who he's not done it against or not done it against, and then I want to see what his current condition is. I usually can do that by seeing how well he's running, how close to the pace he runs. And if I think a horse is rounding into shape and is in condition and all the other factors seem to be there, I don't care if he's won one race out of 20. In fact, I like it because it usually means I'm going to get better odds.
That's right. When he finally does win, he's going to pay well. It's inherent in the pace program that you're using, in the methodology you're using, that you will spot that horse when he's ready to win. So don't eliminate a horse just because you see no wins. By the same token, that is certainly something to look at. A horse's win record is something to look at as a positive factor. Okay, how do we deal with long layoffs? When a horse coming back off a long layoff, do we automatically eliminate him, or is there something that might lead him in? Tom, you were talking about...
Yeah, because that's one of the first, and I'm not going to say rules because we've talked about that, but it's one of the first things I look at. After I've run a class program of one sort or another on the race, usually average purse value, unless a horse has got some kind of an edge or at least an awfully tight fit, an extended layoff is a throwout for me. Some trainers specialize in it, but you're going to spend more time studying your trainers than you are cashing bets if you're going to go to that extended. You're not going to lose many winners in that respect.
It's more critical to the horses coming back after a long layoff going into a route race.
Uh-huh.
It's much more difficult to get a horse into condition through workouts and training alone to run a distance of ground than it is to get a sprinter back in to run maybe six furlongs.
No question about it.
We have found statistically that when you find a horse with a high class edge, and by high class edge we just generally mean he's been running for much higher purses, when he's coming back after a long layoff and he's traditionally a pretty high class rider and they suddenly stick him into a sprint, then you watch out for him because he can run away with lower class sprinters. But if they put him into a route, it's generally for exercising. That's what the statistics say, and the experts here seem to agree with the statistics.
Unless he happens to be catching a very soft field. Of course, your baseline will tell you that.
And they seldom route coming back, then you'll find them go into a sprint. The only trouble with that is that the consensus people sense this, too. They know he's a much higher class horse, and he usually goes off at low odds. So that's the kind of a race where you either pass the race or include that horse, because he's very likely to win the sprint.